I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Francis?
Jamie?
Okay, would you like to know what I've been up to recently?
No, that's disgusting.
This obviously is not disgusting, okay? Like, I've been watching a lot of Now TV. Like, I mean a lot.
All right, that's not what I thought you were going to say, but...
Okay, did you know, okay, there are so many box sets on there. Okay, fine, quickly, what's the highest number you know?
Well, I mean, I guess infinity, but it's not really that easy to think about.
No, okay, fine. Even higher than infinity, 300.
Right. What are you trying to make some joke?
No. Did you know that Now TV now offers over 300 box sets? Yeah, plus all the latest and best shows like A Discovery of Witches.
Okay, I did know that actually.
Okay.
But...
Okay, and did you know, okay, like Sex and the City, Dexter, you can watch all of these and many more on Now TV right now.
Okay, fine. Count me in. I'm in.
Okay, so I've come up with a plan on tour. Ready for this? We're obviously going to spend a lot of time late nights in hotel rooms together.
Well, we'll have different rooms, I've insisted.
No. I've insisted we share a room, we share a bed, we share everything, okay? Whoa. And every night we'll stay up really late.
What?
Yeah, turn off the lights.
Well, that sounds all right.
Open a bottle of wine.
I don't know where this is going.
And work our way through.
What?
All our...
Stop it, I don't want to...
Favourite shows on Now TV. What did you think I was going to say? Do you not think I was going to mention that we could also watch over 1,000 movies, including the Lego Ninjago movie? What do you think I was going to say?
I don't know. It's something to do with your weird... I don't know.
Do you know, I'm very excited today. I'm excited because, firstly, because that douchebag, Francis Ball, isn't with me, which I'm so happy about. He's a freaking douche. Honestly, I don't even know why I'm friends with him. Secondly, I don't know why I do a podcast with him. Doesn't he just annoy you? He annoys me a hell of a lot. Oh, hi, I'm Francis. I'm so clever. What? Like, he's not here today. He's busy doing some branded deal that's way more important than this, which makes him a loser. Hey, I don't go for the money. I just do it for the love of the people. Kidding, Francis. I love you to bits. Today's episode is really exciting because we were in Edinburgh, Francis and I, doing our show, Private Parts, which you can get tickets at the moment, actually, privatepartspodcast.com. And at the end of Edinburgh Festival, they give an award to who they believe, a panel of judges basically judge who they believe is the best comedian, their show, not the best comedian, but their show is the best throughout the entire Edinburgh Festival. And Rose Matafeo. Now, Rose won the award this year. She is an incredible comedian. She is from New Zealand, which makes it even more epic. I say this in the podcast today, like the only famous person I know from New Zealand is like Jonah Lomu and Sam Neill. You know, the guy Dr. Grant from Jurassic Park. Yeah, he's from New Zealand. Bet you didn't know that from his accent. And also, the only thing I didn't ask her, which I kind of wish I asked her now, is what is the difference... And I hope I'm not offending anyone here, and I'm sure I'm going to. But what is the difference between an Australian and New Zealand accent? It's really hard to... Oh, g'day. I think that's Australian. And, oh, let's go in play rugby. I think that's more New Zealand. I don't know. But we spoke to Rose. She was so freaking awesome. She's so talented, as I said. She's doing so many different things. She is going to take over the world. In replace of Francis Day, we have Pete Strauss, our producer, who is also a stand-up comic. He's not on tour at the moment. Don't think he tours yet, but he does occasional open mic spots. So if you go to an open mic spot and just shout out, Pete Strauss, it might be him, or it might not. But anyway, hey, guys, enjoy this episode. I think it's a really, really good one. And Rose, thank you so much for coming on. I know you're super busy, but here it is, for your pleasure, Private Parts. You don't want to wear headphones?
Don't want to wear headphones.
Why not?
Yeah, why not?
It's not my vibe, guys. Not my vibe.
Well, as I walked in today, I saw you wearing headphones, so I don't understand. You were wearing headphones the entire time.
I mean, I'm a last-minute addition, aren't I?
Yeah, that
doesn't mean if anything, you should do what we say and put on...
Yeah.
I can get headphones.
No, I'm not saying you need to. I'm just saying...
I'm going to bounce this peer pressure.
I'm just saying that when I walked in the room, you were wearing your new Bose headphones, and you were excited.
New Bose headphones.
Yeah, and you were wearing headphones. Them... Yeah,
he's wearing... Noise cancelling Bose headphones.
Yeah.
Wow.
I sponsored a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you're wearing these Bose headphones, and I was actually like, okay, fine, and now you're not wearing headphones. So, I mean, I'm just saying that what's wrong with these headphones? I just don't really get it.
Like, I don't like hearing my own voice back or your voices
really?
Back.
Our voices back.
I can hear it now nicely.
Do you know, I always hear voices in my head. It's not very good. It is that I should probably go and see someone.
I think it's normal.
Is that normal?
Yeah, unless they're telling you to do something bad.
Nah, they sometimes do, but I ignore that. Hello everyone, welcome to Private Parts Podcast. This is where we read the most intimate and sort of details of our lives. Joined with us today is Rose Matafeo. Hello!
Woo, woo, woo. What up?
Hey Rose, we've been trying to get you on the podcast for so freaking long now. I mean, we had the funniest time together, didn't we?
We did. Oh my God, it was so fun. It was so fun.
We went into something called Bake Off Extra Slice, didn't we?
Which we did.
Well, you can explain it. It's basically Bake Off, but the extra bit of it,
the
isn't
extra
it?
Bit. Well, no, we just talked about Bake Off, didn't we? And with Jonathan Ross, a little bit of Jonathan. it was literally the most. I was saying to someone else, I felt like I was like hanging out with like the cool kids at school, like all the naughty boys, the naughty boys at school.
You felt that way?
No, yeah, because I was like in the middle of you two, and I was like, why the fuck am I here? This is Jamie and Jonathan Ross, which is really also really weird for me because being from New Zealand and literally knowing both of you from things I've seen on television, being like, what am I doing? Like, so weird and surreal. Eating cake with Jonathan Ross.
Because I bet you were literally like, okay, we got Jonathan Ross, you know, big TV host, great. Yeah. And then we got this wanker reality star. Like, what? I've just won the Edinburgh Fringe, and yet I'm here right now.
We actually go way back, you and I, in terms
of... Oh, we do?
So I used to work when I was 19 or 20 on a television channel in New Zealand called TVNZU. Very, no one watched it. Basically, stoners watched it. It was like a live television show from 4 to 7. And the whole channel, though, had a reality television on it. And so when Made in Chelsea season 3 came out, which we had the rights, we were playing
big
our
season,
channel.
Big season,
baby.
Yeah, big season.
So what they made me do was I had to watch live on television for a weekend from 12 midday to midnight and the next day from 12 to 8 p.m., seasons 1 and 2.
Oh my God, kill me.
In a row on live television with a live stream coming through.
Shut up.
Yeah, like so for a whole weekend, I was made by my bosses to sit.
That is incredible.
Yeah, so live television, and I was just sitting there and coming in and out, and like I got obsessed as well.
Yeah, you would do. You're forced to watch it.
I got Stockholm syndrome.
I went nuts, yeah, and everyone was like hanging there and stuff because it was so funny. So that's how I got weirdly obsessed with. So yeah,
it's cool, man. You're obsessed with me. I mean, that's
you came in later in the game, so you know.
We also got to mention before we kick things off that Francis is not here today, but we have our producer Pete Strauss, who's on board right now because you're a big fan of Rose, aren't you, buddy?
Big fan.
That was you really stitched him up there because what else could he say in that situation?
He could have
imagine
said,
"Imagine if I'd said."
Yeah, yeah. She's a dick.
Absolutely not.
You're a big fan of Rose.
Yeah.
I came to see your award-winning show in Edinburgh this year.
Oh, man. Thank you for coming.
It's very, very good.
I can't believe you came. That's sweet of you.
I came. Nish Kumar sitting behind me.
Yeah, he was.
Laughing very loudly.
Stop name dropping. What are you doing? Like bragging
about who I was. He was simply sat
just
behind
name dropping comedians. What
it's
are you?
A very good show.
Nish is a good pal, but he's always good. Like, you always know when he's in a show.
Yeah.
Because he's got a very distinct laugh.
We're talking before the show about people, like, as long as like a pocket of the audience laughs mm-hmm. and the rest of the audience laugh, he's got one of those laughs.
Well, he's my lucky charm in that sense because, you know, people kind of follow suit.
Because this is what we're thinking, right? So, France and I on tour at the moment, and what we realized, I explained this before, we went to Southport, okay, which is above Liverpool, which people, literally people go there to die. And I'm sure anyone from Southport listening are going like, yep, that is true. Yeah.
I think I've got family in Southport.
You have family in Southport?
I might do, yeah.
Buried there.
I'd say check up on them, actually. You know, give them a call.
It has more care homes than I've ever seen.
Really?
And as Franz and I said, I said, why are there so many care homes? And he went, you'd love this because you love being cared for. I was like, what do you mean? It's not what you go and get kids, I suppose. Things I just love caring. Like things. But we did this thing in Southport where it was literally about 60 people there. Honestly, 60 people in the audience. Maybe less, maybe like 50.
How big was the room?
Fucking huge. It was like... Everything in Southport is old, apart from the theatre. The theatre is so new and nice. It was like the nicest theatre I've ever been to. Just everyone was old. And I obviously run a naked. And it was just this moment where I...
As you do. But, you know, that's how we all start shows.
Yeah, we just get naked. Mm-hmm. I just panic and go, God, it's not funny, I'll just get naked.
At the very start as well. You got real confidence. Well. Yeah.
Everyone look at my cock. I just start swinging it.
Jesus. It's just a show where you progressively become more confident in your abilities and put on more clothes throughout the show.
I start naked. I then end just masturbating.
Right. You start naked and you crescendo to fully clothed and then back to naked.
I go, this is the climax.
Until pre-interval, climax, post-interval. Back into it. But how was doing such a...
But do you know what's it's so interesting is that, like, as you said, you know, we had... there's always this sort of thing where people talk, you know, when you talk about running the marathon, okay, you talk about you're hitting the wall. You know, you're hitting the wall. Mm. Or you talk about other things where whatever happens. There's always that moment in comedy where you think, right, this is it. You're bombing. You're going to bomb.
Yeah.
And in this moment, talking about pockets of laughter... No one was really laughing. We think we got a good show, but it's tricky. So I was going to say, have you had those moments growing up and in your career where you're just like, holy shit, this is it. I'm now bombing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, every comedian has had those situations. I mean, I think there are specific moments or times in your, you know, doing stand-up where you're like, in the moment you're like, I'm going to remember this as one of the worst bombs I've had. But it's always about the situation, and I think that's an example, like, of doing a fucking, you know, to 50 people in a huge theatre in Southport. Like, I had that when I was, like, maybe 16. I remember doing a gig in front of... It was a Dalmatian... It was a club for Croatian and Serbian and... so it was called the Dalmatian Club in Auckland, because I'm quarter Croatian.
Yeah, I'm going to get into this. I can't wait.
And it was a huge hall, and I was performing in front of, I'd say, about six Dalmatian men. Six, you know, six Croatian...
Half men, half dog.
But no, it was... And I was 16. I was like, this is bizarre. Like, I bombed like hell. But it's almost like when it's so bad, it's funny again, so you can like kind of chalk it up to like a learning experience. I think the worst bombs though are when it's like a middle ground. Like I did a gig you know, just the other day
when they're half laughing.
Yeah, when they're half laughing and you're like, but you know you're not doing as well as you could be.
Yeah.
I think it's the worst thing is that when all of the variables are against you, so there's not many people, it's a shit crowd, whatever, at least you can go, fuck this, I could never have succeeded in this situation. But when you have tiny opportunities for it to be an okay gig and you still bomb, that is the worst to me.
Do you know what that is? Because Pete, you've done stand-up comedy as well, haven't you?
I've done a bit, yeah.
He knows what bombing's like.
No, how long have you done comedy for?
Oh, are you ready? No, he's funny, man.
I kind of dip in and out of it. The problem is I've got to do the whole open mic, you know, and you bring someone along. The worst... The last time I did it, actually. So
can we just explain to listen an open mic situation, right? Yeah. Is where so you guys can be, you know this. So why don't you guys explain it? So what is it literally?
You explain this because I don't know the UK kind of.
You can perform anywhere. There's like a million different places to perform in London at any time you want, but you've got to bring someone along with you, and they put 20 comedians on, like amateur comedians.
What, does you bring anyone?
Anyone you like.
Like BYO. It's so you BYOB. Buffers or booze.
You fill the audience, but then the audience just like filled with like amateur comedians who don't want to laugh and their friends that have been brought along reluctantly.
Oh, shit.
Wow. So it's such a strange... And the last one I went to was in Highgate somewhere. Mm. And every other comedian on the bill knew each other. So everyone else was getting, you're going to love this guy. This guy's amazing. You're going to love him. Welcome to the stage. So and everyone was getting like huge, like you know, huge
cheers.
Intro.
Yeah.
They didn't know me. So they went, oh, and we've got... Pete Strauss. And I walked on to silence. Usually they clap you on. And like the gig went okay. But after that, I was just like, oh.
Did you start with everyone? Oh, good evening, Highgate.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh my God.
And it just.
That's
it
tough, man.
Yeah. No, it's horrible. I mean, I was really lucky to bypass the open mic kind of vibe here because I'd done comedy for like a while back in New
Bragging.
Zealand, but well,
yeah, just key jumping all over the place. What the hell is
key
this?
Fucking jumping, man. It's no, but I know I had done cut a bit bits and bobs of it, and it's just brutal. It's just, you know, it sucks.
I don't know how much you learn from it, really.
Like, you get surely you must learn. It's like sparring and then boxing in an actual match, right?
I agree, though, Pete. Though I agree because it's diminishing returns sometimes when it's like. It takes so much effort and confidence and like hyping yourself up to even do comedy.
Yeah.
When it's shit, it's like it's taking more away from you than it's teaching you. I
okay,
think,
so it's like one step forward and four steps back in a sense. It's, so you're basically
unless
going
it goes
down.
Great, you know.
It's like it's good being on a stage and getting comfortable with holding a microphone. Yeah. I'm on a stage. You do that. And sometimes, for no rhyme or reason, sometimes it seems to go great, and then you feel like you do the exact same performance the next night, and you're like, no one went for that.
I hate performing. It's one of my. I said it in an interview.
I hate my job.
Yeah, no, I hate it. Like, I genuinely do. I said it in an interview once in a Guardian interview, and they use it as the headline, and I was like, oh fuck me. But
come see my show.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I love it. No, I think. But I don't have the instinct to some. There are some comedians who are driven to perform comedy because I think there's such a clear cut between two different types of comedians who want to get up on stage, love talking, love being on stage. Like it gives them energy. And then there are other comedians who, if they could get away with not doing the gig, they would love that.
But how does that work? So explain that even more. So you think there are two types of comedians?
Yeah.
Comedians who love performing and comedians who just generally want to make...
I think all comedians are both creative and like to perform, but I think it's the percentages of what those are, that the makeup of that is. So I think a lot of people want to make something and put it out there in the world in any different way, and they're just creative and they happen to be comedians and that's how they express that. Or there are people who really love the, like actually just even people who physically love being on stage compared to people who recoil at that. And comedians just genuinely, I think, fall into those two categories so much of the time.
Yeah.
And who have the confidence to like be on stage and like it gives them, you know, amps them up, you know, being... But for me, I just am so the latter. But it doesn't mean, you know. You
don't. I'm one of the ones, I just purely do it for validation. It's just
you like me on stage? You like me on stage? You're comfortable on stage?
Oh my God, I love people loving me. No, do you know what? I love being on stage. But I have this constant thing where firstly, there's a few things that happen to me. Firstly, I run on stage naked.
Yeah.
I go to take a pee about... 10 times before I run on, and this is no word of a lie. As I'm naked about to run on stage, I think, shit, I'm going to get a boner. That's what I think every time.
What?
Well, I don't know. We call it an NRB, a no reason boner.
Well, that's me being happy.
And I think that's going to happen. I think I'm going to run on stage and I'm going to get a boner and that's going to happen. And that's, so then I run on stage with pure anxiety, with like such, you know, harnessed anxiety within me. And so I then freak out.
Yeah. Have you ever got one?
I've never got a boner. No, on stage. I've never got a boner. But there have been times on stage where like I will be thinking about something else and be so, because you almost, you probably, because you know the show so well, or your show, whatever it is.
Well, yeah.
But you go into kind of autopilot sometimes because you're thinking about other things. And so sometimes I'll be thinking about something else. I'll be thinking about the fact that, like, oh, have I said that right before? Yeah. What's it? And so then I kind of lose where I am. And that's, so you're not in the moment sometimes. Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to sort of coach myself.
But that always happens. You just got to, you go outside your body and then you've got to go back into it and go, oh shit, I am performing. I had that. I've had that tons of times. But especially when you're doing the same thing over and over again, like for a month, you know, in Edinburgh and stuff.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
But this is where I'm going to start. So Rose, the amazing thing about you, you grew up in New Zealand in Auckland.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Intro me. No one knows who I am.
Yeah, yeah. Rose Matafeo. She grew up in Auckland, went to Auckland Girls' School. Isn't that
Auckland
right?
Auckland Girls' Grammar, yeah.
Your dad is Samoan. Yeah. Your mum is Scottish and Croatian.
I love how you say Samoan, because it's the exact problem I always have when I come to the UK. Because it's like the emphasis is on more, so it's Samoa. And whenever I'd say I'm Samoan, everyone be like, what? Yeah, and I'm like, Samoan? They're like, Samoan. And I'm like, you got that right. Yeah.
So the technical way to say it is Samoa.
As if you're saying more. Like Samoa. Yeah.
Samoan.
So why have we changed that and said Samoan?
Because you're British. You colonized basically every facet of my heritage.
I think we're so much right. Like Samoan sounds. Oh, you're Samoan. Samoa. What?
Samoa. Samoan.
Samoa. Hey, I'm Samoa. What? That doesn't sound right, I feel. But I find it. Do you know what I find amazing is that. So your heritage is so interesting. So you're Samoa, and then your
Samoan.
Samoan.
So like think of like the word to mourn. Like I'm mourning your ability to say Samoan.
Samoan.
Samoan. Yeah.
Samoan.
If I could teach you how to say Samoan, that'll be the, you know.
But then, and then your mum is Croatian and Scottish and now lives in Uganda.
Yeah.
So explain that. So that
she teaches over in Uganda. Yeah, she moved over there at the same time I moved up here to the UK. But yeah,
what a rock star.
Yeah, she's fucking cool. She's cool. She's a lot cooler than me, which is very troubling and difficult.
My
parents are very cool. My parents were.
Don't worry, I have daddy issues. So yeah, abandonment issues. Oh, God, they're all in that.
We all got them, mate.
But so you guys grew up all together. Did your parents divorce at some point? Or
they separated when I was about 18.
Okay.
But they were both Rastafarian, so they both got dreadlocks. And they are...
Really?
I grew up in the 12 tribes of Israel, which is like the kind of... Rastafarian denomination of and based in New Zealand. So yeah, it was very strange. So I genuinely fully grew up.
What, like a hippie style?
Yeah, well, like amongst reggae and know the national anthem of Ethiopia and stuff and all of that stuff and pretty yeah.
That's and that's wicked though. Was that kind of life like? Was it like sort of free living, free love, kind of like that kind of style, or was it more kind of your sort of interpretation of life? What was it?
Rastafarianism is it's actually not. I mean, like everyone goes immediately, oh, Bob Marley, yeah, sure. That's the immediate connotation with it, and it's not wrong, but. It actually attracts a lot of people from pretty hardcore background, like religious background. So like people who grew up Catholic or Seventh-day Adventist, you know, that was where my parents came from to Rastafarianism. So it is a slightly more, It's basically skewed more to people in Africa. Like it's a form of Christianity.
But why does that happen? Why? Because they've been so pushed to one religion that they then go, okay, we're going to break free of that.
Well, Rastafarianism is kind of born out of the idea that Haile Selassie, the first Emperor Haile Selassie, when he became emperor, he was a prophet, basically, because he was the first African emperor, so he was a prophet. So basically it's born of that. So it's kind of tailored towards more... less of, I guess, a white Christianity, you know what I mean? So it attracted a lot of Maori and Pacific Island people in Auckland. So
and are you like a community together? Is it like...
I had a lot of goat curry.
Goat curry,
you know?
No, it's not good.
You could have some good goat curry.
I had some bad goat curry then. Really? It was...
Goat curry is nice.
You like goat curry?
Yeah, yeah. I'm a fan.
It was funky.
If you cook it well...
And it's really good.
Yeah, man.
I'm just not sure about the idea of goats. I really like goats.
I read that it's apparently a very sustainable meat if we want the planet to keep going. Goats,
yes.
Apparently.
Really?
It's like a substitute for like beef and stuff like that.
Who's the hero now, Jamie?
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm just going to kill all the motherfucking goats.
Yeah. Do you eat meat?
Yeah, I do eat meat.
All meats?
Yeah, I eat it all. Apart from, what meat have I eaten? We're talking about this. I had ostrich once. I did not like that. And I've eaten hippo. And I didn't
what?
Hippo?
Yeah, I didn't kill the hippo and eat it. I
just, how do you eat hippo?
I don't know. I ate hippo.
What kind of Jumanji shit is this? It's so weird.
I rolled a dice and went into a game and I saw me eating hippo.
Hippos are really dangerous.
Really, really dangerous. Yeah,
really
yeah. Really
dangerous?
Yeah, I didn't think they were in danger, but I ate hippo. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I didn't eat a hippo. I can't remember.
No, actually, our cameraman over there has eaten dog before.
Oh,
How was it? Chewy? Oh.
You ate dog. You bastard. What kind of, like a Labrador? What are you like killing these things?
Come on the mic, Pete. Come on the mic.
Yeah. Where do you eat dog?
It was in Cambodia, and it was quite a horrifying story because I was getting driven in a tuk-tuk to back from these caves. And basically there was a dog running alongside. And then we got back. I went around, came back to the tuk-tuk. Tuk-tuk driver's drunk. Everyone's really happy. Yay, come and have some food and drink with us. Obviously, I'm not going to turn it down. Go over. I'm like, oh, this meat's chewy. What is it? It was the dog on the road.
Oh, my God.
We never saw him again.
yeah.
Walks off into the sunset. He's like, I'm done.
That is intense. That is fucked up.
That's insane. Too much.
I just don't think I can handle it.
That's horrible.
I don't think I can handle that. My game.
Don't try and move on. Yeah. From that. What
just
the
sweet
fuck?
Little dog just running around like having a really nice day, and then just people just killing it.
Maybe
just,
we've eaten dog.
No, I have not eaten dog.
Wow, well, go curry, bro. That was chewy.
Yeah, all your Rastafarian buddies just nailing your dogs around the place. this is what I find. Because my sister, she became like a Rastafarian, but she just basically went to India and took acid. I mean, that was pretty... Because that's what... If a lot of people think that Rastafarian kind of like style is where you're playing reggae, you're smoking weed, you're hanging out, and it's like about free love and music. It's not that, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. It's way more hardcore than that. It's a proper religion, you know what I mean? So it's... And then there is an idea of what it is and then the reality of it, which is very boring. I found it very boring.
but then were you kind of like, because of your upbringing, things like, did you think that certain things were certain ways and this is how it had to be and this is what it was? Or did you then suddenly start to think, oh no, wait, when did you sort of start to realize other things were different? Or
well, and outside of like not
exactly
religion. My parents were very like, my parents are hippie-ish, you know, so they are very much like, you can do whatever you want, like believe whatever you want. They weren't very strictly about this is you should believe in God or anything. I don't think I ever believed in that stuff.
Yeah, see, I don't. But what about you? Do you think
do I believe in God?
Do you believe in God? Here we go. We actually never spoken about this.
Huge question.
Yeah, it's a huge question, man.
Yeah,
do you believe in God?
What do you say?
You're
agnostic?
Agnostic, I'd say.
I think I'm agnostic as well. But yeah, why are you agnostic?
Well, I was kind of brought up atheist.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get this.
Rock on.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Ricky sick, Gervais, man. Yeah. That's brought up motherfucking atheist.
That's why I'd never identify being atheist.
Yeah.
People like Ricky Gervais's attitude to it. It's so grating.
This is it's exactly the same why I'd say I'm agnostic.
It's that certainty that there isn't a God is annoying as the certainty that there definitely is one.
Yeah.
Dude, I freaking get it. And then also what I find so interesting is that, okay, fine, so you're growing up in this sort of Rastafarian kind of like community, you're you're a chick, you're all these kind of, and you're 16 years old.
Chick.
You're a chick, yeah, you're a girl. You're 16. You're a female. You're a lovely woman. You're a woman. And you decide to go into stand-up comedy. And you're 16 years old. And you start doing these things.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you said before, you have to hype yourself up. We had Tom Lucy on the podcast, who was the same age when he started, like 16 years old. Yeah. You have to hype yourself up to do these things. You know, most people, look at people like Mickey Flanagan or other people, like, they're 30 years old when they get involved in these kind of things. You're 16 years old. How do you suddenly go, you know what, I'm going to give this a go? Were you funny always, or did you like being writing funny things? What was it?
I think I was just into like writing, and like I was kind of just relatively a creative teenager that didn't really, it was just an outlet to do creative stuff. And I always found I liked writing and I liked performing. And then I also was a control freak. And so it was like the perfect combination of that, where as a teenager to do stand up, you get to write it and perform it and you're in control of the whole thing. I think that was the most attractive thing to me, because, you know, when you're a teenager, you're often at the mercy of other people's opportunities, you know, other people giving you opportunities to do things or facilitate things for you and stuff. And stand-up was a thing where it was just like, I decided to do it, and I could do it, and I was allowed to do it, and it was just doing, you know, it was just the purest form of just going, I'm going to make something and do it, and it be immediate and all up to me.
But you doing in front of your school? You going to like nights?
I got into it through a school program when I was 15, and then when I was 16, started doing open mic nights.
But dude, you're 16 years old. When I was 16 years old, I was like finding out how to masturbate.
I was doing the opposite. I wasn't masturbating and doing comedy.
There we go.
So I would have rather fucking had a wank rather than, you know, had gone to an open mic night when I was 16, get dropped off my mum, you know.
But how cool is that? Your parents are just like, yeah, go. Did they? I mean, that is.
Well, it was free. It was free. I mean, it was free to do. You know, it was an extracurricular activity that was pretty cheap. They didn't have to pay anything.
Yeah, so. But Ken, and I think I can probably say that this was what? This is 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, 10 years ago.
And
you can say that.
Yeah, I can say that. Works, no, yeah. I'm more thinking what I'm about to say. Can I say
okay,
that?
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I think this is fair to say, and you know, things have changed now, but you were a girl doing stand-up comedy in New Zealand.
Yeah.
People would, I would assume that people would be like, what is this?
Yeah, I had braces and curly hair, like frizzy, wet. It was weird. And also, I had no stand-up about any life experiences that I had experienced, because I was 16 and a fucking nerd. So all of my stuff was weird observational humor about like fucking Sesame Street or some shit, you know, like Denny's.
That's,
you know,
quite
like
funny,
you know,
maybe.
You know,
that's quite just funny though. Maybe that's why it would work.
I think it was that it was weird. It was weird, and also weird to start that young at an age, and in 10 years for my style to change from being born out of being like a weird nerdy teenager who's like really self-deprecating into like an adult now where I can't keep that up.
But was that kind of born, is it because, you know, at 16 years old, right? I went through.
What were you doing at 16? Tell me. Give me a
snapshot. 16 years old. I was trying to date Daisy Dot Noble. Bleep that out. I was trying to
keep it in. Yeah, keep
that in.
Daisy Dot Noble.
Can we just put up a little subtitle of that name?
Daisy's. This is the girl that remember I cried on her plimsolls and my tears were dropping on her feet because I keep breaking up. Yeah. Like, I was like, this is low. I was so in love with this person. I was at 16 years old. I was trying to date her. I was just experiencing stuff. I was so insecure. Yeah, I was like awkward. I didn't really, I like girls, but didn't really know if they liked me and all these kind of things. And I think that I was just worried about whether people liked me, whether I was cool, whether I was hooking up with the right girls. And you were there doing stand-up comedy. And
but this is the exact difference. So I had no distractions of boys because I did not kiss boys as a teenager.
Why did you not kiss boys?
I did not kiss boys. I went to an all-girls school.
I went to an all-boys school. And
yeah,
I was just practicing on boys.
I kissed no one. I've told us about like, what was my first kiss? Like 15 or something. It was with a boy who wore, you know, a Che Guevara tote bag thing. It was that kind of vibe. Like I was very much, I was such a like a proper nerd. So I had all of this, time to put into all of these other things because I had no boys to distract me.
Because you were literally like, no, I want to do maths.
No, yeah, yeah, no, no. I wanted to. Oh my God. If I could give up a 10-year career in comedy to have kissed three more boys as a teenager. Absolutely. Absolutely. like,
send back that Edinburgh Award.
If my 26-year-old self came back to my 15-year-old self and was like, okay, you got two choices, all right? You can either hook up with three more boys this year, or you one day win the Edinburgh Comedy Award, I'll be like, three boys.
Yeah, yeah. I want to get boys, right? laid.
I'll give you names. I'll send you names in the morning, all right? That's what I do.
Oh, Rose, you're such a jet. Listen, that is the end of part one. We're going to be back in part two. We've still got Rose. We're going to have more repeat and loads more stories. See you in part two.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.